You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We're presented by CLNS Media. Today on the show, I've got Doug Gottlieb. Doug and I are going to talk a little bit about Zion Williamson. We're going to talk about some of the prospects that he has enjoyed seeing this season. Doug's right now in Minnesota for the Michigan-Minnesota game tonight. Doug, how you doing, man?
I'm good. You know, it's always amazing. Last night was like the only night maybe all year that college basketball was the only thing on, and it was a great game, and it caused this kind of bizarre conversations afterwards. But good time to capitalize on it. I just wish we had a game where it was more competitive, and we were talking about hooping and all this other stuff.
Well, it was Takepocalypse last night. And like even into today, right? Like it was just a total mess. And part of the reason that I wanted to reach out to you is because I actually think you and I have pretty different perspectives on this stuff. And I think that you're someone who comes back at me on stuff. So I actually, it's not like we're going to argue about it, but like at the same time, I think that you have a certain perspective where you come at this and look at the value of college basketball within Zion Williamson and how it has helped Zion Williamson. So whenever you see Zion Williamson last night, and you know, for people who don't know, he gets injured 30 seconds into the game against North Carolina, and it looks like a knee sprain of some sort. What is your immediate reaction
when he got hurt?
Yeah,
I can't believe I've never seen a shoe bust up like that.
Really?
So I used to wear, people can go back and track this, I used to wear my shoes, I wore a 12, and I used to wear like a 11 or a 10 and a half when I played. Because I just like the feeling of it being tight on my foot, you know? And part of it was, I mean, this is a little bit, no, I don't think anybody cares, but I was a little brother, and my big brother would always give me his hand-me-downs. And so my shoes were always big, always. And then, you know, you start to get into high school, and I got every shoe I had ever wanted. And so I started getting my shoes smaller because I always hated when shoes felt too big. So I kind of overcompensated. Anyway, I believe it's because I had my shoes too small. They would rip all the time on the right where his ripped, which is right. I don't know what that is, on like the outside of your foot. and I was kind of like Derrick Rose in terms of, you played like low and lateral, and you're really pushing off a ton. And you know, like I just distinctly remember playing the NCAA tournament wearing some Nike GP2s. And they blew out, and I was like devastated by it. And I had to throw on one of the walk-on sneakers for the end of the game. But I've never seen, like, they used to just, you know, they'd come off a little bit, there'd be a little flap. Like, I've never seen the whole bottom of it. So my first thought, honestly, was, like, this is one of the issues with Zion that we're still going to have to figure out whether or not, forget about the shoes, can his body stand up to the punishment it's going to take with all the planting? Obviously, I don't want the kid to be hurt. I thought he was going to come back in because it looked like he was fine. Probably just scared himself, you know?
That was honestly my initial reaction as well, for what it's worth. I thought he scared himself. And then it comes out afterward, he has an actual knee sprain. So I was wrong about that. And, you know, certainly we were. But
a knee sprain is such an innocuous, you know, it's such an innocuous, like, knee sprain. Like, I believe he has a knee sprain, but, like, they didn't really give us much. But anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
No. I agree with you. And, like, look, I mean, we can get into like, hey, should he have been wearing like the PGs? Like, honestly, probably not. That's a pretty small shoe for a guy.
No, he should wear LeBron's, right?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think LeBron's are the easiest thing for him to wear because they're so thick. They're very sturdy. I wonder if that'll happen at some point. I mean, he played on the Adidas circuit, so we'll see if he ends up going with Adidas and they end up creating his own shoe, because obviously Zion is going to have his own shoe at some point. So I guess that when I first see him go down, I go, oh no, this is terrible, first and foremost. And then obviously your reaction, which was, I've never seen this before on a basketball court where the shoe just totally blows out like this. And then third, it was, I knew we were going to have a million takes on whether or not Zion should be playing college basketball. And it frustrates me a little bit. And like I waited until like halftime to tweet. Look, like Zion should do whatever the fuck Zion wants to do, right? Like if he wants to play, go play. Right. If he wants to sit down, go sit down. I do think his circumstance is different than other just like random lottery picks. I think that that's like a comparison that's been made today. It is a little bit different, I think. But it's just, I think people are trying to make decisions for Zion in a way that makes me a little bit uncomfortable.
Totally. That's what we do on social media. And honestly, it's like, you know, I feel like Trae Young, I feel, looks like an asshole today. I mean, Trae Young made his way into the lottery because of college basketball and because he chose a school close to home where they let him do whatever the fuck he wanted to do every time he came up and down the court. To his team's detriment, by the way, they didn't hold him more accountable defensively in terms of shot selection, right? But yeah. But for Trae Young, like, it couldn't have worked out any better. Like, Trae Young embodies the absolute best of what can happen in a one and done, where the kid doesn't, he may personally have expected a one and done, but, you know, like, honestly, I've known Ray. I played against Ray, his dad, at Texas Tech, who was a hell of a player. And we talked about it, and he was like, look, one of the things that we're thinking of is when we go to Kentucky, Trae's not really a one and done. Like, you know, like P.J. Washington's a rare success story where a lot of times kids don't want to go to Kentucky because they're like, well, if I don't go one and done, now they're going to recruit over me and I'll never get out of there, right?
Yeah. Like, so, I'm not going to sit here and say that I know Ray as well as you do, but, like, I talked to him about that as well, and they thought going into the year Trae was two and done. They didn't think one and done.
Yes, correct. So my point is, it could not have worked out any better for Ray, for Trae, any better. Like, he goes there, he leads the country in scoring, assists, he's a top five draft pick. He's in a team that they're not trying to win now, so he can figure it out kind of on the fly. And he's going to play in the league 15 years, right? And so he comes out on Twitter, like, you know, and it's different because it's Zion. Like, look, dude, you should be championing this. You should be going, like, it's great. You grow your brand. He wouldn't have a Puma deal if he didn't go to college and put up numbers. And for Zion, like, as much as we all had a curiosity about Zion,
sure.
You know, I've talked to people who had the exact same opinion that I did on Zion last year, which is like, man, no position, looked a little sloppy. You know, does he play hard? Can he shoot? I mean, we still don't, like, he's still not a great shooter. I think he's going to be terrific. I think he's going to be a really good pro, especially a small ball center and a 2019 undersized power forward. I think he'll be great. But, I mean, look, he's really helped himself by not just going to Duke and buying in and getting in shape and playing hard for Coach K. But let's be honest, the Duke brand is a good one. And he's made Duke watchable, likable, enjoyable. And I think those two things go together. I think he's benefited greatly from the relationship. And we'll sit here and go, like, well, you know, that was the hottest ticket in town. Hey, do a little research. I went back to 2013 every year since 2013, and I'm guessing before that, Duke, North Carolina is the highest rated college basketball game by a mile. Do you know why? Because Coach K and Roy Williams, they bring in dudes every year, and they play likable styles, and they get after it, and they play close games. Is it a little different with Zion? Yeah, because he's a YouTube sensation, because he dunks. But, and because Obama was there, but there was nothing else on. It literally was perfectly scheduled. Congratulations to ESPN. You know, that was the latest they'd ever played the first matchup. But they did it because it was the last day when there was no other basketball on TV. It was great. So that helped it out as well. My point is always, we talk about these kids, like, the use and abuse. Like, look, dude, when you're a good player and you're 14 years old, we've made it so easy now. You don't come out of pocket for anything. You don't buy a pair of shoes. You just become entitled. And there's nothing wrong with a little elbow grease and getting after in college basketball, playing for a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. I don't care. You'll end up growing your brand, making friends and experiences for a lifetime, and you end up the best because of it. And, yeah, maybe there's a kid or two, there's a Zion Williamson or two, who could go out and sell some jerseys and make some money. But for 99.9% of the kids, it's not really that way. College basketball is not really that popular. That's actually the crazy thing about it. That's actually right. The part that the Zion thing actually drives more clear. And he didn't have to sign up for it. He did, and he's gone all in. And we have all these people who, like, Trae Young did it not because I don't know if he really feels that way. But part of it is, like, if you get in social media, and he's a social media guy, he's just like, well, this is what everybody thinks, because you become you get in this alternate universe where everybody thinks the NCAA is the devil. You know, everybody thinks, like, I saw you retweeted DeMarcus Cousins thing. Like DeMarcus Cousins, who's a lot smarter than anybody ever gave him credit.
Yeah.
But he sounds like an idiot when he's like, well, look at all the money they're charging for those tickets. Where's that money go? It's a secondary ticket market. It doesn't go in Duke's pocket, you dummy. Come on, man. You're better than that.
It's fair. You know? No, I mean, but like, here, I just kind of want to jump off of a lot of points that you brought up there. First, I think that the craziest thing about all of this is he has made Duke likable. Zion has made Duke likable. Yes. Like, full stop. Everyone wants to watch Zion. Second, so you bring up the idea of Zion's brand being grown through Duke. I don't know that I totally agree with that. I think that Zion's brand eventually, like, say he goes, we just have nothing to test it against, right? Say Zion goes to the G League and we see this dude in the G League leaping, like, essentially box jumping small houses and crushing basketballs with his palm. He's still going to get like a crazy shoe deal because he still would have killed the G League this year, I think. Like, he still would have gone first overall once we saw what he could have done against elite-level players,
honestly,
I think.
Like I'll be totally honest with you. I don't know if that's the case. Like, look, the G League will never get the ratings. I mean, the perfect example is, I don't care who you are. Like, Duke Carolina outrates everything, no matter who plays for Duke Carolina. That's just
no question.
The way it goes,
that's,
right?
That's true.
You know, so... And would he have been on TV more? Would they have found a way to put it on TV? Sure. I'm sure they would have at the G League. But, like, he also would have been playing against grown-ass men. You know?
And but here's the thing, deeper. Though. I think Zion is specifically well-equipped to do that, though. Like, specifically, he is 6'6", 6', whatever he is, 285 pounds. He is more athletic than literally everybody in the G League. And this comes from someone who, like, I talk extensively about how great the G League is regularly. And, like, I think
the G League is awesome. But actually, the G League kind of makes my point. I know you have other things you want to get to, but the G League makes my point
in the brand
of college basketball is basically here's how strong the brand is. Okay? You and I know this. Are the players better in the G League than they are in college basketball?
No doubt. They are.
By a country mile.
Yeah,
it's right? Not... They are. Because they are some of the college basketball players from the last 5 years, and they've developed, and they're playing a pro game, they're shooting, right? And
yeah, like, there are, like, always...
about the G League.
Well, there are always five players in college basketball that are better, basically, than everyone in the G League, I think. The rest of
I actually don't think that... I actually don't,
you don't
think
that's
true?
True?
I think... No, he's hit... How many threes he hit all season long?
Well, I think 10? That you can look at... Well, yeah, he's hit probably... I think he's shooting 28% from three. But here would be my case to you. So... DeAndre Ayton right now is averaging like 16-10 in the NBA.
Yeah.
You can look up and down.
But they can't win.
Like,
they can't win because he can't really defend. But yeah, okay.
Sure, but he would have been the best player in the G League this year pretty easily, I think.
But last year, would he have been as dominant in the G League as he was in college basketball? I think the answer is no. I mean, there's just no big guys in college basketball. You know, like, anybody who's any good as a big guy is gone, which is crazy because the league is going away from some of the big guys. But anybody who's any good as a big guy, like, they just go right away. And so, DeAndre Ayton's playing against a bunch of stiffs last year, whereas in the NBA, I don't think in the G League, I don't think it would have been. He was a man against boys. And look, I saw Zion in person in the Louisville game. He was great.
Sure.
I mean, he was way better. I liked him way more watching him in person in that game than I did previously. I liked him before that. But, I mean, like, remember, look who he's playing against with Louisville. And then, like, he's country strong. But, I mean, he does not have a man body yet, believe it or not. Like, there's still room for, look at all these guys. Look at LeBron's body. Like, LeBron's got this, these guys, when they get to be, he's only 18 years old.
Right.
When he gets to 21, like, he's going to be a freak. He's going to be, I guess, like 260, and he'll have the V, you know, his waist will be taken in. So I'm not saying he's sloppy, but he's a better version now, and he'll be even better. And, like, look, you play against grown-ass men. So, I mean, you could go through the big guys. I don't think he would be as dominant. And, I mean, look, he does struggle shooting the basketball. And when you play professional basketball, you have to shoot it more. And you have to shoot from deeper against better competition. So I don't think it would be as much of a snap. But my point is, like, we do – you actually brought up a great point kind of unknowingly in that we both agree the G League has really good players.
Right.
And they run better offense. And, you know, like, I've watched Steve Mihailuk go in and light up the G League, and it's pretty awesome to watch.
Certainly more translatable offense to what the NBA is.
Nobody cares because we don't care about minor league basketball. We like college basketball with the coaches, with the arenas, with the cheerleaders, with the fans, with the smaller gyms that people show up to, with TV and ESPN. Like, sorry, that brand has been established, and we keep trying to perfect a really, really, really good system. And I just hate all these guys coming out and acting and almost like goading him and do like, you got to shut it down. Like, when did college basketball become so dangerous that he's risking life or limb playing seven or eight more games? I didn't know that really occurred.
Well, yeah, I am generally with you that I don't think it's like the worst thing in the world for him to keep playing. Like, you know, if he wants to play, he should play, period. That is what I believe. But what I will say is this. I do think that there is a medium between, you know, the NCAA is fucking dog shit trash and these kids should get paid. This is like a slavery cartel system. And, you know, the NCAA is doing all that it can for these kids. The NCAA is great. It's doing so much value for so many people. Because at the end of the day, what Zion is getting from Duke, I think, is less valuable than the extra year of earning potential in terms of what his shoe deal would be in the G League this year and what he could potentially get paid if we could fix the scheme a little bit better. You know what I mean? Like, there's just a medium
Here's the problem with it, okay? And it's going to happen, you know? Like, look, the real reason that there was a one-and-done rule and that they're going to go away from it. It's not because the owner, the GMs, the coaches, most of the players don't want them to come straight out. The players, because there's guys that'll take guys' jobs that aren't really that good. The coaches, because you draft a guy in the first round, even with the G League, at some point you're going to have to play him, and you can't win with young players, right?
For like, what it's worth, I agree with you on the coaches and GMs not wanting this to happen.
Right. They do not want to happen. And because, like, read Steve Kerr's piece. He's like, dude, it's a joke. They're not ready. They're not grown-ups. They're not grown men. They don't shoot that well. They don't know how to play. And when we draft a kid in the first round and he's 18 years old, we got to play him. Because the owner's like, hey, dude, you drafted this kid in the first round. He can't play? Like, no, it's going to take time. Like, okay, but I want to see him play. And look, watch any team in the NBA who's trying to tank. You don't have to do anything other than play your young guys. And you automatically tank because you can't win with young guys. You can't win with kids in a man's game. So, but the reason that agents are the ones who want it, and the reason they want it is because it pushes these guys, it speeds up the clock towards them getting towards the second contract, right? Now, even if sometimes that second contract doesn't come or isn't as good a contract as it should be, agents are just thinking about second contract. So I think it's more than agents, though.
I will say that. Like, I think that from a moral perspective.
Like, look, we don't like Sam. This, the same people, like, we don't like Congress. We don't like the whole we don't like the NCAA thing. Like, it's so stupid. It's just so dumb. Like, do I think the NCAA is perfect? No. Do I think, for the most part, the spirit is in the right place? I do. It's a complicated thing. You got 350 schools.
It works for 99% of kids.
Correct. It's a great thing for that, and you can't adjust to the smallest minority. That's not the way bureaucracies work. You got to do with the majority, and this is the way it is. And they continue. I think they continue to get better and better and better and make more sensible rules. But like, look, we're ruining the sport. I got to tell you the idea of open transfers is going to be a disaster. Like, you do this for a living. You do a great job. You know, your depth of knowledge for these guys recruits into college is better than mine. I've been doing this for 16 years now. And I'm telling you, every year it gets more and more difficult to prepare because you're like, oh, shit, I forgot that guy transferred. Oh, wait, who? What? Wait, I saw him two. Guys are playing at three schools.
I will admit.
And, you know, at some point, we're going to have a guy play. At some point, we're going to have a guy play at four schools. It's going to happen. And it's a joke. And we're making it so. I talked to a guy who I think will be in the Hall of Fame. And he's like, look, I can't say it because you get shouted down by social media and so many people who are upset. But we're making it so easy for kids that, like, the second you bench them to teach them a lesson, or if they're young kids and they just need to get better defensively and moving up fast, the second you do, their guy at home is like, hey, fuck this, we're out, let's transfer. And they go and they start moving. And then this is the big thing that everybody misses on, okay? When you play at a school for, I think, two or more years, you become part of that basketball family. And you come to that school, you become a part of that kind of school, right? And you see some of it with senior night. But I'm telling you, the rest of your life, that's where your friends are going to come from, your jobs are going to come from, your contacts are going to come from. And these dudes that bounce school to school to school, like, it sounds cool, this grad transfer. But when you grad transfer, like, let's take, what's his name, Cremo, the kid at
Joe Cremo at Villanova, yep.
Joe Cremo, right? He had a chance. He went and visited Kansas, and I was there. And he went and visited Villanova. And it's hard. Like, Villanova's won two out of three national titles, and they offer you a scholarship. That's a hard thing to turn down, okay? But I don't know if you realize Albany, those guys might get fired, right? So he ain't ever going back to Albany. He's got a degree. He's got an undergraduate degree from the University of Albany. You think they're going to welcome him back with open arms when he fucked their program by leaving his senior season? No, I wouldn't. Fuck you, dude. I'm not bringing you back. No way.
Let me just say that if Albany fires Will Brown, that is the worst firing. Like, that might be worse than firing Scott Cross at UT Arlington.
Will's done a great job, but, like, think about if you're Will. Like, I take this kid, he becomes an all-league player, and then his senior year, he graduates on time, and he's out. Now, look, he might have left anyway, but why don't you have a rule where you have to sit a year even as a grad transfer?
Yeah, I would prefer.
I'm getting orange and popcorn here.
Oh, that's great. I would prefer the kids be able to transfer where they want. And the reason is that I think we need to give these kids some sort of ability to dictate their own lives. Like, just straight up. Like, we need to give them more ability to dictate what they want to do from a moral perspective.
They do. But there also has to be, this is your first adult decision. It's your first adult decision. And you're going to make mistakes in your adult decision. And you get a chance to transfer. You can make another.
Here's the other
decision.
Thing, too, though, with it. Like, coaches, I think a lot of coaches do a really good job with this. A lot of coaches are very realistic, especially at lower levels, about what they think of kids. But, like, it's not above coaches to lie about what a role is going to be here. You know what I mean? Like, this is not.
It's what? I'm sorry, what?
It's not above coaches to lie about what a kid's role is going to be, or potentially. The kid just is unhappy at a school and wants to move. Like, kids transfer universities engineering all the time. You know what I mean?
Transferring is not evil. Okay, there's nothing wrong with you're not happy with your role. You're not happy. Sometimes you're not happy at school. But, like, look, these guys that transfer semester of their first year, like, are you kidding me? Like, what are you doing? And you may have shown up and said, this is not the place for me. Like, go through the whole season. And then you walk into the coach. But I'm just telling you, like, the idea that we should allow kids to go where they want, like, hey, sometimes no is the right answer. Sometimes you have to grow and learn from a mistake and make the best of it and go back. And I mean, like, look, the truth about Notre Dame with me was I wanted to transfer because I wasn't happy because we didn't practice transition basketball. We didn't play fast. I was good in the full court and the half court. I mean, hell, John McLeod, I only went off ball screens to shoot in high school coming to my left. Only, that's it. Like, I had to learn to go to my right, even though I'm right-handed. Yeah. And every ball screen we ran, every ball screen action we ran was to my right. And, like, it was like he wasn't listening. And so finally, before I got in trouble, I was thinking about transferring. And then when I got in trouble, I didn't want to transfer because I didn't want to be the kid that pushed out because thank you so much. Because I got in trouble. You know, I was willing to do whatever it took. whatever it took. Anyway, that's not something heroic of me. My point is, like, hey, I was super unhappy. I understand, and I know to this day that had I stayed at Notre Dame and not gotten in trouble, you know, by year two, I would have felt much more at home because I had a buddy coming in there. By year three, I would have been kind of the man. And by year four, I probably would have been ready to go like any senior on any college campus. So, you know, kids don't know what they don't know. They don't understand that, hey, sometimes not getting your way actually helps you in the long term. And we bend over so backwards to make sure, hey, we just want to make sure everybody's happy. This is no different than the participation trophy problem that we have in youth sports. Like, look, sometimes you're going to lose. Sometimes you're going to go somewhere and you're going to learn to be a great teammate. You know, I mean,
the thing is, though, I think we're off track in terms of the elite kids, though. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like this, you're like, Doug, you were a good player, no question. Like, your credentials speak for themselves on the floor, but you weren't one and done, like, potential kid that could go and, like, immediately be in the NBA. Like, you were a kid that needed to grow. And I think that there is something to the fact that kids don't know what they want until really they get it, right? And sometimes hearing no is a realistic scenario.
They also all think they're going pro, Sam. Like, Sam, when they open it up.
A lot of them do, yeah.
I mean,
a lot of them do for sure.
I heard a story the other day from a secondary source. There's a scout that came in, talked to Michigan State, and he was in the locker room, and Izzo hadn't talked to him. He said, and the scout said, how many guys think you're going to want to play in the NBA? They all read 14 raised their hand. How many guys legitimately think you're going to play in the NBA? And 14 raised their hand. And he goes, well, that's great. I don't have to travel the country because I was just at Kansas the day before, and they had 14 guys, and you got 14 guys. And, you know, there's only 30 first-round draft picks, and you know, five or six of them are Europeans. So that cuts down. I don't have to go to, you know, like if you go to these locker rooms, you ask them, like, legit man, you think you're playing the league? They all do. And so,
well, they think they're playing in the league, but they're not, they don't think they're, like, leaving that year in a lot of cases, at least. A lot of them are unrealistic.
No, but the idea, it's the idea of, you know, however many high major leagues you want to say, like, every one of those teams has three or four kids that think they can leave and go to the pros. And eventually it may even out, but it's going to be super ugly early on. And we have a great system.
Here's the question, though.
You get a chance to play. Go ahead.
Is it okay to have this ugliness for 5 years or 7 years or whatever it takes to get to a situation where these super, super elite kids that are confounding the system right now are getting fairly compensated for what they are?
But they are getting fairly compensated.
See, I don't agree with that. See, this is where we definitely disagree on this, because I agree with you that generally for the, like, normal college basketball kid, even a kid like, for instance, Aaron Henry at Michigan State, who I think is, like, you know, a potential 2021 first round pick, something like that. Like, he right now is getting a fair deal. Kids like Zion, kids like RJ Barrett, kids like Cam Reddish, etc., to me, they are not, because their value is worth more than what Duke provides for them. Duke provides value for them. I agree with you on that. The brand relevance of Duke provides value. The scholarship is of some value, especially considering, or if they can go back to school. I actually don't know what Duke's rules are in terms of being able to send them back or being able to go
everybody
back and get a degree. Yeah.
Go back. It's an ACC rule. It's an NCAA rule. Everybody can go back.
Yeah. So that's great. But I think that their value in terms of what they provide for Duke exceeds what they get back from Duke. And that is where the unfairness, I think, comes in.
Well, I would disagree, because I think it doesn't exceed it. I mean, but they get into a school they couldn't get into on their own. That's not to knock the intelligence level. That's actually just telling you, as you know, how difficult it is to get into a college, especially one like Duke.
Yeah, like I got, the best. I mean, I got like I think a 1300 on my SATs. I was, you know, I had like near a 4.0 GPA, and I had no chance to get into Duke. You know what I mean?
It gets progressively harder every year, you know? And it's like $65,000 a year to go there. Now, you'd have aid if you were one of these kids and you did get him. But the point is, You're getting into a place that you couldn't get into.
So here's my thing, though. And look, that's a $250,000 value, let's say, him getting a degree, someone getting a degree like that, right? He's getting $250,000
for a year, right?
No, for 4 years. We're saying it's $65,000 a year to go to Duke, right? So $250,000 for a scholarship, right?
Post-tax, sure. That's post-tax, that means you got to make $400,000 to pay that, but okay.
So $400,000. And then let's say training.
Cool, you couldn't get into normally.
So pre-draft training is probably for, let's say, 6 months. It's probably $100,000, something like that, on top of that.
Sure.
Just having access to an elite level coach like Coach K, that's kind of an innumerable value, but let's tack on an extra $100,000 for the hell of it, right? Getting access to him for 6 months. So the brand value, we can also add, we can say there's some sort of value there. I think that Zion would have been found regardless. I think that he would have gotten his deal regardless in terms of endorsements, but whatever, let's throw on some value there. I think Zion is genuinely worth like $10 million to Duke this year, probably. Like, I think it is an insane number that he is worth.
So if he could have made $10 million going to the G League and signing a shoe deal, he could have chosen to do it. Nobody stopped him from doing it. We don't need to change any rules or anything. Like, if you have that kind of brand resonance, and he might have as a YouTube sensation, everybody watching him in the AAU showdowns against LaMelo and all the dunks in high school, that's fine. Like, nobody's forcing you to go. Nobody forced him to go.
It's still very clearly, college is still very clearly the best option for these kids. And we should have a system where the best option fairly compensates them, in my opinion. Like, we should have a situation, like, it doesn't have to be a drastic change. We're not talking about
because then you start kind of working down the line, right? Like, all right, what about Trey Jones? Like, what's his value? And then you say, Trey Jones can collect money. Like, what do you do for the women's sports? Like, that's just
why is it so bad to let Zion and Trey Jones? But that's just like kind of an archaic old thing. You know what I mean?
No, it's not. It's not. It's not. They've sat there and go like, hey, look, that's just not who we are. And you're more than welcome to go and play whatever form of NBA professional basketball you can. While you're here, this is what you do. There's rules for everything. It's like, I've heard Bill was talk about it. Well, there's no other profession. Well, that's not true. He's a lawyer. Like, you can't just go practice law until you go to school. Then you got to take what is it called? The MCAT? I don't even know. I have no.
The LSAT for lawyer, LSAT. Yeah.
You take the LSAT, and then you got to go to law school. Then you got to take the bar before you can ever call yourself a lawyer. Like, you don't get to skip steps there. You don't. Like, we have different rules for different sports, different things. And
isn't the idea Jay probably could not have been a lawyer coming directly out of high school? He needed the training to become a lawyer and learn the actual craft of it.
What if you're one of these savants that you read every book and you study everything and you quote chapter and verse? And why do I got to go to law school? Like, I'm good enough to do it, And by the way, the NBA thing—that's a collectively bargained upon deal. That doesn't have to do with the NCAA.
Right. That's not the NCAA.
When you're in our house, it's like it's basically what my dad would always say. Where I had a 12 o'clock curfew even when I went away to college, and I would say like, hey, why do I have a 12 o'clock curfew? When I go to school, I don't have a curfew. And he's like, well, that's cool. When you're at school, you do what the fuck you want. When you're in my house, you do what I want. And that's really what the NCAA is saying. They're not saying this is perfect for everybody. They're saying this is what they've decided is the best for the greatest number of people. And you know what? Like, if you don't like it, that's okay. You don't have to do it. No one forces you. Nobody puts a gun to your head. It's a really good system. And by the way, like for Zion, like, God forbid something happens. Or that he has a Jay Williams. Like, I'm actually really bothered by Jay, because Jay's been really smart in his career, in his media career. And, like, let's be honest, everything that he draws upon, all his successes, is because of the legend that he created at Duke. He lives off that image. And, oh, yeah, by the way, I live off my image at Oklahoma State. And I wasn't nearly the player that Jay was. That's what gets you into the business world. That's how it works. But the bigger thing is, like, look, I'm not saying you make terrible points, but you'd have to change the entire system. You'd have to – now, are you if you're collecting money, okay, and so pay here, taxes here. On it, like
here's my thing then. How does allowing kids to make money off their likeness change the entire system?
It makes you professional.
To an extent, sure.
No, you're a professional. You're getting paid to do something. You're a professional.
Right.
Now you're being compensated with room, board, scholarship, and all the other things. Like, now it's a job without, you can't be fired. It's a job that has limitations on hours of participation. It's a job, but you don't have to pay for any taxes on any of the benefits. You get, you know,
but
you
that
get
money,
all these different
that money's
perks,
coming from the outside, though. That's not coming from inside where, you know, theoretically the school can't fire you, or like the coach, you know, this happens, but the coach theoretically can't run you off the team. Like it's coming from the outside. So that's not the point, though, is it?
What money's coming? Oh,
if they're coming from their likenesses. Because, yeah.
Yeah. Because you want a guy like, listen, if you make it or don't make it in college basketball, we want to make you, it's because you don't ever want to run the risk of, hey, you're taking money from a car guy. So, I mean, look, you're gonna dramatically change the entirety of the system, because if you do it for men's basketball, you got to do it for women's basketball, and you got to do it for all these other sports. And
is that bad though? Is getting these kids access to money bad?
I mean, like, look, in the dollars and cents of collegiate sports, it is bad because, like, look, you sell the naming rights for a team, you sell stuff in the program, you sell all this stuff. You know, we take it, and it's because we pool together all of the, you know, whatever, all of the name and likeness rights, right? And we get a greater value out of all of those than we do out of one person's. And yeah, it takes away from a kid collecting money, but, you know, so what happens when a kid's starting quarterback and he's getting paid, and all of a sudden he gets benched? Like, what happens if they want to pull that money from him? You know, or what happens
that
to the
happens.
Guy that's collecting
like,
money?
At least, oh, right?
Yeah, but then you're going to have social media outrage over that. Like, this is not—it's not a bidding war. It's not what we're about. You know, you're signing a contract to have a school pick up everything, so you don't have to do anything, and they give you a cost of attendance, which I think, frankly, was overdue, and that you have a little bit of money in your pocket. You know, between facilities and where you live, like, it's just, there's no amount of money that you're going to make that's going to be life changing, game changing, and there's no amount of money that's going to stop people from cheating and from wanting to get a little bit more. So if you have a rule and this is how you want it to be, like, we don't want you to be professionals. You don't have to worry about paying taxes and reporting earnings. We don't have to worry about different appearances that you're going to make for different car dealerships and the conflicting alliances of, hey, you know, wait a second, Jimmy John's Ford and Billy Bob's Chevy. Like, Jimmy John's Ford paid for the naming rights for our team, but he's a Chevy guy. Like, dude, there's a bunch of unintended consequences that we're not even starting. So college sports is just going like, yeah, hey, pass. That's not what we're about. And if you want to be about getting paid and having sponsorship dollars, that's cool. Go play the G League, or go do the overseas thing, or if the NBA changes their rules, you can go do that. But this is the cost of admission is you got to keep your grades up. Okay, you got to take a certain course load. You got to show up 20 hours a week, and you got to agree to not, you know, not take money for your name and likeness. Right? That's really what it's about.
Yeah, I get that. I get that that's their perspective. I just don't agree with it. I think that we need to find a way to fairly compensate these kids. And maybe it does come from the NBA. Like, maybe that's the easiest solution. Maybe the NBA figures out a way to get more money to the G League and make it so G League teams can offer more competitive salaries. Right. And look, like, the part of this that we're not really talking about is the fact that, you know, there are probably kids around the country getting paid under the table in terms of just where they're at. Right. At college, shouldn't be getting paid, are getting paid. This stuff happens, you know, but I think that maybe that's the goal. Maybe it should come from the NBA as opposed to maybe it should come from college.
Well,
I don't know, but I think
there's a deal that I like that hockey has where you can be drafted and, you know, and then you go back to school and they still represent your rights. I think these guys should be able to work out with NBA teams more in the off season. You know, they should work together. They don't. And some of that is the NCAA worried about the NBA boogeyman. Some of that is the NBA. And Like, look, I think college coaches should grow and evolve and run more NBA stuff. I mean, I'm kind of lost in this was. Does Duke have an offense? Do they have a set?
No, I mean, they just run base motion, like the whole game. They run base motion and they run early break stuff.
That's but true. It's not even, they're not even, they're not running, you know, roll and lift. Like, I was embarrassed for Roy Williams coached circles around him. And granted, he had the better team because Zion wasn't there, so, and he had older players knew how to play. But they ran some beautiful stuff. They transitioned up and down the court. They spread him way out. You know, he's gotten away from some of the old box set plays that he used to always. He still runs them, but everybody knows him in college basketball. He's been running them for forever. You know, like, I think Izzo this year is running a lot more NBA-style stuff. Like, but a lot of those guys, they can't get out of their way. They keep running their own old stuff. So I think that is a would be a fair criticism. I think
that, yeah, I agree with you NBA, on.
Having guys that go, there should be a way in which you should put your name for the draft and you can come back. You know, there should be a way where you I think they should create greater avenues for European players. All right, so you were on a junior team playing overseas. Okay. You know, I mean, European kids, I believe they still have to pay their own flight to get here. Like, what?
Yeah, you know? That's crazy.
Like, huh? It's crazy.
Totally crazy. I mean,
and so I think there's lots of smart fixes we can do. I don't think it's a smart fix to open it up and do the name and likeness thing. One, because the truth is, that most guys don't really have the value. And so, even though they would be getting money, it would really be pay for play. And they just kind of said, like, hey, it's not what we're about. And in basketball specifically, you only have to do it for 1 year. We're talking about 9 months. If you're really that good, one, you don't have to go. You can go to the G League, or two, come for 9 months and then collect on the benefits of, like, Zion. The second his season's over at Duke, he can go have an autograph party. He can sign a Nike or an Adidas or an Under Armour deal, whatever you want. And so, and I do believe that deal has grown based upon all the promotion that he's received playing at Duke.
That I agree with. I definitely agree with the fact that he went from being like a top five pick to the number one overall pick, which is a difference of, you know, probably $10 to $15 million over the course of his 4 years, and then his shoe deal also grew. I think it would have grown just organically when people saw him, but I agree with you generally that it has grown by being at Duke. Having said that,
what do you think Nike does? What do you think Nike does today? Like, man, that is a bad. I'm a Nike guy. I love those guys. Have been good to me, but that just it's one of those
it's not a great look.
That's the indelible image of college basketball this year is Zion Williamson laying on the floor and his foot going through a shoe.
It's not great.
We're not talking Nike. No.
And, like, by the way, again, like, Zion played on the Adidas circuit. Like, this is, you know, he's probably pretty new to Nikes in terms of wearing them regularly. Yeah, it's not a great look for them. Before we continue with Doug, I have a couple of ads I need to read for you. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Plus, there's no minimum account deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections such as the 100 most popular stocks. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners of the Game Theory podcast a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. Sign up at gametheory.robinhood.com. That's Game Theory, gametheory.robinhood.com, and you're going to get that free stock. Our second sponsor today is betonline.ag. It's another huge week across the NBA with some very exciting matchups. There's only one place to get in on all the action. It's betonline.ag. It's a sports casino. It's a virtual casino. You name it. Betonline.ag is CLNS Media's preferred sportsbook online. Use that promo code CLNS50 for that 50% sign-up bonus. CLNS50. 50 at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. I'm looking forward to the Sacramento Golden State game tonight. It's going to be a really up and down game. You know, probably look into considering betting on the over in that matchup. It's going to be a fascinating little game, just because it's always a fun time to see DeMarcus Cousins go up against the Kings. Go online or use your mobile phone to sign up today at betonline.ag and try in-game live betting where you can participate with all the action every play. Use the promo code CLNS50 for a 50% sign-up bonus. You can also use the promo code clnsmedia.com/win. Betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. Now, back to Doug. Real quick before I let you go, let's talk about some guys that you like around college basketball. I'm just going to give you the floor. Who's a guy that is like way underrated right now in college basketball that like you think is a legit pro?
Oh man, he put me on the spot like that. I have names. I mean, I know you like Akpala a lot from Stanford, man. He's really improved. He's an Orange County kid.
Yeah.
And I think he's developed. I'm not sure he's as good as he's looked just because of the quality of competition, but he's really improved. I mean, there's a guy who's going to be a mid to late first round pick who I don't think most of America has seen, and he's a hybrid guy, multiple position defender. And as he improves, you know, if he can really improve as a shooter, he should be a starter in the NBA. I like Jordan Poole. I'm watching him right now. Like he didn't make when I saw him last in person, it was against Wisconsin, and yep. He missed a bunch of pull ups. But I'm more of a process than result guy.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with his shot. There's nothing wrong with his body. He's big enough, and he does have the ability to get his own shot. I think he translates into the NBA. I don't know if he has to go this year. I'd like to see him make a higher percentage because I think he will next year. But I like Jordan Poole.
Jordan Poole's definitely a top 40-ish guy for me. I'm a fan.
Yeah. Whereas I don't think, like, Trey Jones, I don't know what you do with him. I do think that here's the thing about Trey Jones that I like. Sorry, super loud. Is, you know, if you're going to be a backup guard, Kendall Marshall once got really upset at me. His dad got mad at me, and I said, this is on draft day. I was doing my big board on ESPN, and I was like, I don't know what Kendall Marshall is as a pro because he's not good enough to be a starter, and as a backup. Backup point guards in the NBA, you pick up 94 feet, you change the tempo, and he's just kind of a non-athlete and a non-shooter. A great passer, and big. Now, he ended up tearing up his knee, and that's what led to him falling out of the NBA. But it was kind of accurate. So I think, you know, his brother Tyus obviously can make a shot but can't get by anybody. Trey's a better athlete and can really defend.
Yep.
But, man, he is a shaky ball handler and decision maker, which I did not see coming. I thought he would be a lot more comfortable, but as a backup point guard or a third point guard, you can make the league if you can just guard people and then eventually get to where you can make a shot. The shot doesn't look broke. He just has no confidence in it right now as a freshman.
Yeah. Shoulder injury too. It's probably worth saying that as well.
I'll tell you a guy that I think is going to be really, really good in time is Dotson at Kansas. You know, he has a gear that other kids don't have. He's got a gear. He's got a toughness. He's nasty. He's obviously got to put major work for his jump shot, and I think then once he starts making jump shots, I think he's got a chance to be a starting point guard in the NBA. And I'm watching him here warm up, and you know Michigan's got a point guard that isn't he like Eric Snow 2.0, and I don't know if Eric Snow could make the league these days.
Yeah, that's kind of my question.
Yeah, I mean, can you make it as a non-shooter? I mean, here's the thing. So much of it is about finding, like, T.J. McConnell couldn't shoot in college.
Right.
All he took is mid-range jump shots his first couple years in the NBA. Now, he played on a terrible team, and he's, you know, from Pennsylvania, so they played him, and he made it, and he's tough as hell. But, I mean, isn't that what Michigan has? Isn't that why Michigan's so good defensively? Like, I wouldn't close the book on him as an NBA player. So I don't know if you want to throw some guys at me. I'll tell you if I like them or I don't like them. I'm kind of walking around here, Williams Arena. I'm running on fumes a little bit.
All right, I'll throw you a few names here that I like, that I generally am a fan of, that I think will play in the NBA. Phil Booth.
Okay. No.
You do not think Phil Booth will play in the NBA?
Nah, he can't get a step. I mean, maybe because he can make shots. But he can, like, the Villanova guys are all going to be overdrafted, but, like, he's everything that Dante DiVincenzo isn't as a player, a shooter. He just makes shots, just jump up over you, but just not a very good athlete. I don't see it. I could be wrong, and, you know, everybody loves Villanova's culture. They all want to get those guys to fill out their bench, but, I mean, look at Josh Hart, and I think Josh Hart bumped into his ceiling as he's kind of, they've kind of figured out he's not a starting caliber player, and I don't think Phil Booth is anywhere near what Josh Hart was. And Josh Hart's a really good, big, strong athlete.
I think he's a worse Josh Hart, I think, basically, who can shoot it a little bit better, which gives me hope.
Yeah. Yes. But, man, it's hard when you're a non-athlete at the point. So I'm going to say no, but here's the thing. I don't love him. Like, go ahead.
So if I was a team drafting Phil Booth, I would play him off the ball next to a, like, Giannis or a Ben Simmons or someone like that. And just have him guard
but then
point guards.
But then you got to be able to guard. Now, they can guard, but can he guard in the NBA when you can't put your hands on people? You can't be as physical as those.
That's a good question.
That's one of the things Josh Hart runs into is they're like, man, Josh Hart's so physical, such a good defender. And then when he plays against starters, they're just like, yeah, but he's 6'2", 6'3", and they just shoot over.
That's exactly right. That's a really good point. Matisse Thybulle at Washington.
Like him a lot. I like both Washingtons. I think both Washington kids are pros. Here's what's fascinating about Washington. Those are the same guys that got Romar fired.
I know. I was talking about that with the assistant a couple days ago.
Now, and some of it is, and here's the thing with Matisse is, how is he going to be in man-to-man? You know, like, now you got to relearn how to play defense a little bit. But I like both. I think both of those, both Ian Norvell, those guys are both guys that will play in the NBA.
Noel or Zach Norvell?
Noel. I'm sorry. I combined. I did the old combination of the two: a Zag and a Husky. My bad.
Give me Ty Jerome.
What is he in the NBA?
I think that he's kind of similar to what I just said for Phil Booth. Play him off the ball, have him run off screens constantly. He's more like Landry Shamet-y, though, with the way that Philly used Landry Shamet this year. Just run him off screens
really
constantly. Yeah, and he can be a secondary ball handler.
Okay, I'll buy that.
It's all about finding a role, I think. Like, that's the biggest thing for me is just, like, finding what specific niche these guys can fit into. You know what I mean?
Right. You have to find that niche. You have to have somebody who believes in that niche, and then you have to have a team and a coach that develops that niche, right? Like, it's a whole kind of combination of it. I have one question for you, and then I got to RJ Barrett. Are we convinced that he's going to be a great NBA player?
I don't know about great. I do not know great.
It's your podcast, and I want you to go on about him. But here's the thing: he's never not been the guy on a team. And if he's not great, then all of a sudden he has to not be the guy in his team. And I just don't. He's not a good enough shooter. Everything he does is off the ball screen or one-on-one with the ball in his hand. He's a ball stopper, not a ball mover. Like, now, look, I think he'll defend, and I think he's got a good body, and I think he's competitive as shit. But I'm a little concerned that it's mechanical as a shooter. He's more selfish than I thought he'd be, and I'm not convinced that he's some profound breakthrough starting talent. And, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you're not the best player, like, if he can handle that.
So I generally agree with you, and I agree with the point of the way that they get him looks. They do all sorts of stuff with, like, weaves at the top where they get smaller guys on him with switches, and then they'll start him on the right side of the floor and get him downhill going left. That stuff is really valuable, I think, and that's why he's been so good this year, is because Coach K has put him in pretty good situations. Like, we talked about Coach K not really running a whole lot of shit. That's probably the best thing that he's run this year. With RJ, what scares me is the selfishness and the lack of trust in his teammates. But I wonder if that improves whenever he has guys around him that can shoot, because you watched that game last night. I think you called the game last night, right?
No, I didn't call. I was watching on TV.
Oh, were you? I thought you were there for some reason, but you watched the game.
No, but you're right. You're the only guy that you passed to. I'm not sure I'd pass to Trey Jones if he's standing wide open either.
Yeah, and Jack White's missed 26 straight threes, and Marquise Bolden can't shoot, and he has no confidence in Alex O'Connell, who's shooting 34%, is like a little white guy shooter that's supposed to shoot. Jam Delorier can't shoot. So I'll be interested to see. It's kind of impressive to me that he went for like 33 and 14 last night with no spacing around him, no Zion, one of his best friends gets hurt, and he has the mental capacity to adjust to that and still go out and kill. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yep.
So I generally believe
it's going to be fascinating. It's going to be fascinating where we came into the season wondering, like, R.J. Barrett, stud, number one pick. I don't know what Zion's going to be. I'm a little concerned about the weight and how his body holds up, but I'm pretty convinced I know what Zion's going to be, and I'm not totally convinced I know what R.J. Barrett's going to be, and that really surprised me.
Yeah, he's really, like, it's flipped it's flipped totally.
Yeah, which is, by the way, why I love college basketball, because it gives you a much better sense of who a guy is, how he develops, how he handles the team, how he handles coaching. You have a better, it's like a test drive. You know what you're buying when you're an NBA team. You know what you're buying when you're a fan. I think it's an underrated part about it, which is, and I don't know if it's you tweeted, somebody tweeted, like, hey, let's not kid ourselves, like, the NBA loves them to go to school for a year or two, so you find out who's bought in, who changes. And that's why I like 2 years, because 2 years you see who, like, Russell Westbrook changed his body from year one to year two. Some of it was just general maturation, but some of it was he put in the work, and he became a freak. And I think you can see who wants it and who doesn't want it. Anyway, you know, I like the Porter kid at USC. Like he's a freak talent, but I mean, I think this year in college basketball has been great because it's exposed the fact that yes, doesn't know the plays, he doesn't know where he's supposed to be. Oftentimes in the wrong place. He's obviously had some problems with buy-in. He doesn't want to play defense, you know. And it's like now it's like buyer beware. Whereas if he had to stay for a second year, like he'd have to figure it out. He'd have to buy in more to what Andy's trying to do. And I think he'd be the better because of it. And so now you run the risk of he gets drafted somewhere in the first round because he's a talent. He goes to the G League and you have no idea like how he's going to be wired and how he's going to play.
Yeah. Best advice I've heard for a team drafting Kevin Porter, sign Jamal Crawford. Just period. Have Jamal around him every day. Have him like live right next door to him for God's sake. Just put someone there that will be around Kevin and have him do the right things and work, you know, the way that he's capable of working. And, you know, the talent is there. It's all about just making sure that he's doing the right things. Doug, I'm going to let you go. Tell the people what's going on in your life. Tell the people where they can find you every day.
I do a radio show daily, 3-6 Eastern time, 12-3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. You can download I have an all basketball podcast this week. I had Chris Lowry on. You remember him, Stan, who was the head coach at Southern Illinois. Former point guard of Southern Illinois, the assistant at Kansas State, told some stories about, you know, what happened, you know, why he grew up in Evansville around Calvert Chaney and so, and Walter McCarty, some of those guys, told some AAU stories, some stories about taking his first JUCO assistant job and then bouncing around and becoming Bruce Weber's assistant at SIU and then Illinois and then getting the head coaching job and getting fired by his alma mater. He about a year or two ago, he buried a 15-year-old son that special needs. We talked about that. So we talked about a lot of things. It's called All Ball. It's just like long-form interviews like this where it's more about people's lives. And then, of course, you can check me out on Fox Sports covering college basketball.
Doug's the best. I really enjoy his work. We disagree on not everything, but a lot of stuff. And I still really enjoy talking to him every single time I talk to him. I do think that he is a great dude. This has been the Game Theory Podcast. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. Till next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.